This is Mickey Truscott, and today we'll be mapping nutrient density on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be talking with my friend Mickey Truscott, and we'll really be diving into the realm of functional nutrition. Mickey is a nutritional therapy practitioner, chef, blogger, and author of the Autoimmune Paleo Cookbook, and co-author of the Autoimmune Wellness Handbook. She is the creator of AIP Batch Cook, a video-based cooking program that teaches users how to prepare allergen-free meals in their own home. She teaches cooking classes online and in venues around the country like Bastyr University. In 2012, Mickey founded autoimmunewellness.com, a website with recipes and resources for those suffering from autoimmune diseases. She lives in Willamette Valley, Oregon, so close to me on an incredible farm. I'm super excited to dive right into this conversation with Mickey, so let's get started. Hello, Mickey Truscott. Thank you for being here on the 15-Minute Matrix.
Hey, Andrea. So excited to be here chatting with you today.
This topic that we're talking about today is so important to people like you and I who work with food as medicine in a for reals kind of way. So I'm wondering if we could dive in first and foremost and really talk about what you mean by nutrient density.
Nutrient density sounds like what it's describing, how many nutrients are in a food, either in quantity or in a variety of nutrients. So we have two angles to look at nutrient dense foods, foods that have a large amount of a certain nutrient, or foods that have many different nutrients. A lot of times these are cofactors and working together to kind of either be absorbed better or be utilized better by the body, but generally they are foods that have lots of nutrition in them.
Before we go in and talk about what these nutrient-dense foods do for us, can you just name off a few of your favorite nutrient-dense foods?
Absolutely. So liver is my number one top nutrient dense food that I love to include in the diet. So especially for people with chronic health conditions, I have autoimmune diseases and I work with a lot of people with autoimmune. We tend to be anemic, and iron is in great supply in a food like liver, either beef liver, calf's liver, bison liver, pig liver, even chicken liver. Depending on which animal you get it from, it might have more or less iron. So chicken liver actually has more iron than beef liver. But other than iron, liver also has a lot of B vitamins. It has some zinc, which also can be a tricky nutrient to get. And then it has a lot of proteins that are actually used for the body for detoxification, because spoiler alert, it's actually a detox organ, right? And that's what fuels our bodies for doing that. So liver is my number one. My number two is seafood. So fish and shellfish have a lot of minerals that are hard to get in the diet, depending on which one we're talking about. There's lots of zinc, selenium, even some iodine in some. And then those omega-3 fats, which are anti-inflammatory. So fish and seafood are another great one. And then number three, I would say, are just generally really bright, vibrantly colored fruits and vegetables. So I know that's not one food, but if there's anything that you guys can think about that just has this really beautiful color, it usually means that there are lots of antioxidants in those foods. So things like berries that are just really richly colored, even if you think of like a sweet potato, you can find purple sweet potatoes, those kind of things are really great for us.
I love that we're really thinking about how to bring our clients and patients more bang for their buck, right? This is where I think there's just such an opportunity with food and nutrient-dense foods and even nutrient-dense superfoods. Do you have any foods that fall into that category? You know, something like goji berries or acai or seaweed. Are there things like that that you also think of in the nutrient dense arena?
I don't love the concept of superfood because I think a lot of the things that you know, on packaging are touted as superfoods are they tend to be more berries and fruit, which, you know, those foods all have valuable characteristics that I think are great. But when we look at everyday foods, there are some foods that are superfoods also that yes. don't really have, you know, the marketing behind them. Right. So we already talked about liver, but I would say organ meats in general, bone broth, you know, bones are something that, you know, when we process animals, there are lots of bones and those bones don't really get used, but there is a lot of nutrition there. So just maybe even thinking about some of those other parts that are not as, you know, sexy marketing right. wise, but really give a lot of nutrition. For me, I'm more of the organ meats, bone broth, and then the high quality of the food. So, definitely. You know, if you're sardines, oysters, going back to that shellfish, those foods are definitely in my book, superfoods.
Awesome. I love that. I love that reframe of the superfoods because I think those foods that you mentioned are superfoods. You know, things like the liver, which I definitely want to come back to in the skills arena. I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Terry Walls, who mapped offal in episode number 2 of the 15-minute matrix, which is a great compendium to what we're talking about here in terms of nutrient density. So we kind of spoke into this central part of the matrix quite a bit. You talked about immune and inflammatory balance, oxidative stress for sure, with the colored foods being able to address the oxidative stress, detoxification. Let's look at some of these other factors. I'm wondering about environmental inputs when it comes to these classical superfoods like liver and seafood. Anything that we'd be considering for our clients and patients in terms of where they come from? What are the environmental inputs in these foods?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, a lot of people are a little bit worried about, especially organ meats, where this animal came from. And I think it's definitely important to consider getting offal from animals that have been pasture raised and not fed a crummy diet that is not optimal for them, because we want them to be as healthy as possible. We want them to have beautiful, vibrant livers for us to eat. We don't want them to be dealing with a toxic load. But one thing that is a little misconception about liver is that they think that because it filters toxins for the animal, that the toxins are actually in the liver, which actually they get exported just like for us, they get exported to the fat. So if you're worried about eating liver where your animal comes from, it's actually, I think, safer to eat liver than the fat. The fattier parts of meat. Not that I think fat is bad, but I think we should consider all of the meat that we eat, not just when we're eating the liver, if that makes sense. So
totally makes sense. Such a good myth buster, because I think that is a huge misconception. And it's interesting because when we look at the most toxic parts of our animals, it is the fat, and it is where we then introduce further hormone imbalances because we're eating a lot of those toxic hormones that are stored. So interesting mythbuster there.
You got to worry about all the meat that you eat and hold it to a high standard, because, you know, this is what we're using to fuel our bodies, and it does have a potential to cause harm if that quality piece. But one thing to know about organ meats is they're not very attractive on the market, right. So they're very affordable. And so even the highest quality organ meats are like $3 to $5 a pound, very, very cheap compared to the highest quality muscle meat from the same animal. So, you know, there's another reason to jump in there at the highest quality with those organ meats, even if you can't afford all of your meat to be the best. That's going to be the most nutrient dense. It's going to be great for your pocketbook. Speaking about fish and shellfish, again, sourcing is really important there. Our oceans are pretty polluted, you know? So when we're talking salmon, wild caught, you know, if you can get it from Alaska, not from, you know, rivers or polluted waterways, I actually think that sardines are an ideal, even more ideal than salmon, for getting those omega fats, because they're very small fish. So they're very low on the food chain, which means that they haven't compounded mercury. So every time a fish gets eaten by a bigger fish, that bigger fish kind of inherits the mercury content of the little fish. So when you're eating very large fish, we're talking even like tuna or halibut, these are massive fish, those have a lot more mercury because how many thousands of fish have they eaten in their lifetime, you know?
Yeah, it's such a good point. And it brings us back to kind of the skill of how we eat the most nutrient-dense diet, being conscious and conscientious of where those nutrient-dense foods are coming from. And I think you're giving us some amazing tips to share with our clients and patients. I'm wondering if we can move to the story portion of the matrix, that left-hand side, the antecedents, the triggers, the mediators. In your practice and in the people that you've worked with over the years, is there a certain population, like the autoimmune population or people with chronic illness, that do better with having less variety perhaps of foods, but more nutrient-dense foods? And also, is there something about our ancestry that speaks into the kind of nutrient-dense foods that may work best for us as patients, so that it's not across the board one size fits all?
That's really interesting questions. So first, I would say, you know, people with autoimmune disease, which is predominantly what I work with, the immune system is in dysfunction, and the immune system is a nutrient hog. We know that about all of the functioning, you know, from vitamin D to all of these cofactors for just producing different cells and having that antibody response. It's just using a lot of the body's resources, which is why a lot of autoimmune diseases come and manifest in depletion. So even with something like celiac disease, you know, the small intestine is just ravaged, and the body's ability to even digest, say you're getting a normal amount for a regular person of things like calcium and iron, your body with celiac disease is just not going to be able to absorb those. So, you know, each different disease, and there are over 100 of them, so I can't go over all of them, but for what one reason or another, they usually come with symptoms or manifestations that cause the body not to even digest food very well. So yes, this is a core issue for people with autoimmune disease, and it's much more important for this population than, say, the general public. And then as far as kind of which nutrients, it really depends on the presentation, the autoimmune disease, and the digestive health of the person. I definitely think there's something to people leaning towards, you know, maybe they need like a very cooked, brothy type of diet that might have less raw vegetables, or maybe a very lighter seafood driven, anti-inflammatory high vegetable. Maybe they can digest that vegetable content, kind of playing within all of this. Maybe what's nourishing to a person based on their history, their ancestry, or how their body's digesting. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. I think it makes me think about what my family ate, and how, you know, my parents sucked the marrow out of the bones and ate chicken livers and tongue, and where those foods would nurture and benefit me and my body and my healing. You talked a lot about the GI and the immune and inflammatory piece. How have you found, even personally, that eating these nutrient-dense foods affects and influences your mind, your emotions, your just ability to have more resilience?
Mm. So I notice personally the iron to be the biggest thing for me. I have Hashimoto's and celiac, which don't set me up for success very well with having a normal iron metabolism and in my body. So I notice very quickly when I haven't been eating enough organ meats, especially liver. I try to eat it every other week, which for some people it might be too much, but I feel very much energized by it. I find that my skin has good color. I have good energy. Even if I have it too late in the day, it'll make me not sleep. It's that energizing for me. I think that's the biggest thing that I notice is really, I am very attached to that. And, you know, every person, with a chronic illness might attach to something different. You know, I've had clients who for them, fish oil is really helping them manage their inflammation. They notice if they miss it for one day, you know, so we make sure to have that in supplement form or in their diet every single day, just to make sure they're getting their benefits.
Yeah. I think there's some amazing things for us to consider there in terms of when we're thinking about food as medicine, how we elevate the nutrient density that we're bringing in. So it's not just eating whole foods, it's really introducing some of these high nutrient dense, like you said, either foods that have a myriad of nutrients or they're particularly high, like the liver in one nutrient. I'm wondering if before we say goodbye to you and let you go, you can tell us your favorite way or ways to consume liver, because I know it's a bit of a hurdle for people taking it on.
Yeah, so I have a recipe that is free on my website. You guys can
We'll link to it.
Google or link to it. It's a beef liver. You can use chicken liver. But really what I do is I make a pate and I try to mask that pungent flavor, which, full disclosure, I don't love, but I eat it all the time because it makes me feel amazing. I mask that with some pastured raised bacon, so some really high vibe happy pig bacon, lots of herbs, some cooked down beautiful onions, and blend it up with some coconut oil, and I eat it on vegetable slices or cassava crackers or something, and it's delicious.
I love that. Yeah. Any final words for us?
The biggest thing about nutrient density that I missed in the beginning was you can only eat so much food in the day. And when you make a choice to eat a low nutrient dense food, which is fine. You know, there are plenty of reasons to eat something that's not nutrient dense. But if you make too many of those choices, you're lowering your opportunity to actually choose a nutrient dense food. So I think of nutrient density as this thing that you get into the routine of choosing these high nutrient dense foods, and then you don't really have to think about it anymore because it's in your routine. But if you're always having this low nutrient dense diet, there's really no space there to actually up that nutrient. And that's where I think people get into the trap of thinking they need to take all these supplements when really there are a lot of foods out there that have these nutrients. So maybe a little reframe there might help people think about that and how they could change that for themselves or for their clients.
I think you did a bunch of reframing for us today and you busted some important myths. Thank you so much for joining us, Mickey.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode, please go to 15minutematrix.com/notify. I'll be sure to drop into your inbox with a short reminder that a new episode is ready and waiting for you. You also have an invitation to email us at any time. I definitely want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can always email us at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15, minutematrix.com.